Well, last Sunday evening we were in the company of Elijah. Tonight we're in the company of his successor, Elisha. If you remember from last week, Israel has walked out on God. Does that mean that God has walked out on Israel? And the answer is no. And as we come to 2 Kings chapter 5, God is to be found in Israel, but he's found with his prophet Elisha. That's where God's presence is known. That's where God's blessing flows. That's where God's grace is to be found. And it's not just Israelites who are flocking to Elisha. So also are the pagan Gentiles beyond. Just how big is God's embrace? And the answer is found in our reading 2 Kings chapter 5 and the healing of Naaman. Now this is not a fairy story. It's not a history lesson. This is about a real God meeting with real people, changing real lives. He's the same God today, which means this passage is speaking to us, to me. So if you have a Bible, you might like to follow it with me as we look together at 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 to 19. What we're going to do is we're going to look at the narrative, just going to go through it, and then we'll draw a very simple lesson. So let's have a look at what happens to the narrative. Verse 1. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honourable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valour, but a leper. So how would you describe Naaman? Valiant, honourable, great, national hero. He's loved by his king, adored by his people, feared by his enemies. When you look at this man's a colossus. And as you look at him, as it were, as that description rolls on, you find yourself looking up and up and up until we come to the last word, which is really the punchline. Leper. Naaman is about as great as it's possible for the world to make him. And yet for all that, he is unclean. He's diseased, defiled, disqualified. He was a mighty man of valor, but a leper. Now, when we think of leprosy, we think today of what's called Hansen's disease. But in the Bible, the word leprosy covers a whole range of disfiguring skin diseases. But whatever it was, when people saw him, at least if the reaction of this little girl is aimed to go by, when they saw him, they felt pity. Now, here's a silly illustration. 30 years ago, I taught a boy called Edgar Scrace. And I used to joke to myself, Edgar, you're a disgrace. I know it's not very funny, but it used to, as I was marking his book, I used to be saying, Edgar, you're a disgrace. It used to amuse me, all right? I shan't tell you what I call some of you, but he used to amuse me. And he wasn't a disgrace, he was a nice lad. But you know how it is, when you've been saying something to yourself for a long time and chuckling to yourself when you say it, if you say it to yourself often enough, with the best will in the world, sometimes it just pops out, doesn't it? And you don't mean it to pop out. So when it came to the parents' evening, and I thought, I've got to speak to his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Scrace, I mustn't say the word disgrace. Well, I went through the whole parents' evening without uttering the word disgrace. And then almost the last parents who came to see me were the Scraces. And as they come and I saw them, I thought, I mustn't say disgrace. I mustn't say disgrace. But 30 seconds into the conversation, what did I say? Disgrace. I said, of course, Edgar's writings are disgrace. Oh, what have I just said? But the point is this, isn't it? Even when you're not trying to think about it, somehow there are some things which you just can't avoid. And if you met Naaman, try as you might, and you might try and think of his greatness and all the honours and this mighty man of valour, somehow you couldn't get over the fact that he is a leper. Somehow, in some way, even if you wouldn't say it to him, with your eyes and in your head, you'd end up focusing on his leprosy. He was a mighty man of valor, but a leper. Do you see the point? In spite of his greatness, his defining quality is that he's a leper. Beyond all other things, that is what really counts. But of course, things are about to change. They start verse 2 in Israel with a personal tragedy. A little girl from what seems to be like, what seems like a godly home, is kidnapped. She's kidnapped by a band of Syrian raiders. And when you think about that, you think of Boko Haram and all those things, it's a heartbreaking situation, isn't it? That little girl kidnapped. That day, all her dreams died. That day was the last day she saw her mum and dad. She'd never see them again. Maybe when the raiders came, they murdered her parents. And yet, however dark this providence, God is in it. Because she ends up serving Naaman's wife. Verse 3, then she said to her mistress, if only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy. Just an unknown, unnamed slave girl who refuses to forget her God, who refuses to give in to bitterness, who still trusts the Lord, who does all things well, and whose heart is tender towards her master. A young slave girl. It's only a little hinge, isn't it? But upon this hinge, a great door is going to swing. If only my master was with Elisha. Well, wife talks to husband. Darling, it's got to be worth a try. What have you got? You've got nothing to lose. And so verse 4, Naaman talks it over with his king. And his king says, go! And so he does. With a letter to smooth the way. And a gift to secure the services of the healer. And the gift is massive, verse 5. So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. It's about 340 kilograms of silver. That's about 53 stone. It's about 90 kilos or 14 stone of gold. Absolutely massive, isn't it? Well, verse 6, he arrives at the court of the king of Israel, and he comes with this letter. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy. So how does the king respond? Well, he panics. Verse 7, and it happened when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes and said, am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me. As far as the king of Israel can see, the king of Syria is just picking a fight. He sent this request, a request about which I can do nothing. And it's Naaman he sent, this great general, this great commander. It's just an excuse for war. So instead of the king of Israel pointing to Elisha, say, ah, that's the man that you need. He simply throws up his hands and says, oh, am I God? Well, if you look at verse 8, Elisha gets word. And Elisha sends word to the king and says, in effect, well, even if you don't believe there's a prophet in Israel, Naaman the Syrian will discover that there is. If you don't want to know what you've been brought up to know, then God will go looking for those who do want to know. And so verse 9, Naaman and his entourage, they travel to Elisha's house. I wonder, can you see the scene? Think of this great Syrian general. He's a national hero. And he's just come from the king, isn't he? So he's be kitted out in all his finery and his splendor, accompanied by his retinue, his servants, his bodyguards, and arriving in his great chariot pulled by war horses. Wow. Quite a sight, isn't it? Right, like the Prime Minister turning up at your door. And you peer through the curtains and there's the limousine and the men in suits. And the Prime Minister himself standing outside. Verse 9, then Naaman went with his horses and chariot and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. Naaman has arrived. But what happens? Well, Elijah's nowhere to be seen. There's not even a sort of voice inside calling out, saying, I'll be with you in a moment, I'm a bit delayed. Instead, some nomarch turns up, a messenger, and it's a pretty blunt message, verse 10. Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. Is that it? Have I come all this way just to be told to go and wash in the Jordan? And Naaman's incensed. Who is this little man think he is? Verse 11, but Naaman became furious and went away and said, indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. Think of it, I've come all this way. The least Elisha could do is get up and come out of his door. The least he could do is walk 5 paces and come out of his front door and come to me. Doesn't he know who I am? And as for this remedy, I thought he'd stand before me as it were, roll up his sleeves, call on the name of his God. There'd be a bit of the sort of the hula hula and the razzle dazzle and hey presto. And as for the muddy Jordan, when Syria is famed for the cool liquid crystal of its rivers, what's going on? And Naaman's got it all scripted, hasn't he? He only has to stand there, the great general, the national hero, this great colossus with his retinue. He's only got to stand there and Elisha and God himself will come running. And if we're going to do this properly, we need some theatrics, please. Not just a word of promise. Elisha's message is insulting. Actually, Elisha's God is disappointing, isn't he? What sort of God is this? Why did I bother? So he turned and went away in a rage. Isn't that interesting? Elisha doesn't treat this great man like a great man. He treats him, well, like a leper. Without rights, with nothing to recommend him, with nothing to negotiate with. And effectively, Elisha says, you can take God at his word and be healed, or you can do it your way and go off in a huff and remain a leper. Well, this is all too much for Naaman. He's come all this way. It's just too humiliating. It's too simple. Actually, frankly, it's too ridiculous. So he storms off. Well, even if Naaman hasn't got his best interests at heart, his servants have. Look at verse 13. His servants came near and spoke to him. You get a sense of they came near because obviously he's... He's like a volcano at this stage. He's blown his top. They came near and they spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean? They know the measure of their master. The prophet had told you to do something great, or maybe here's something greater still. You've got to humble yourself. And do it. How much more than when he says to you, wash and be clean. They know his pride has been stung. And their soft answer and their wise counsel turns away Naaman's wrath. Verse 14, so he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. The word dip there means to dip. So Naaman's got to take off all his honours. He's got to strip off his clothes. He's got to be exposed for what he really is, a naked, unclean leper. He's got to abandon his greatness and confront his shame. And he must go down. Down. He must abase himself. He must go down, down, down under the water. And not just once, sort of quick in and out, and hope nobody noticed. He's got to do it 7 times. Because it will take 7 times. 7 times to humble himself before God. 7 times to lose more than his leprosy. 7 times to surrender himself to the Lord God. 7 times to submit to his word. 7 times to become what the Bible describes as poor in spirit. I'm not the God who comes running, Naaman. You've got to bow before me. God is the true king. And this mighty commander who's used to telling people what to do and sending people here, and his word is law. He must realize that when he comes, the true king, the living God, he must come as a little helpless child. Obedient, humble, submitting himself to what God tells him to do. And coming as a leper, and therefore utterly, utterly, utterly dependent upon the mercy of God. So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored, like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Wonderful, isn't it? The unclean is made clean, and the defiled is made whole. And with his flesh like the flesh now of a little child, we could almost say it's like he's been born again, isn't he? He hasn't just got his life back. He's been given a new life, a new start, a new beginning. Now, do you see why Elisha refuses to come when Naaman calls? Had Elisha come out to him, had Elisha performed the healing on demand, then Naaman in his own eyes would have remained the master, able to dictate the terms, able to pay his way, able in that sense to heal himself. And Naaman's pride would have remained intact. But by staying put and sending a messenger, Elisha is compelling Naaman to have dealings directly with God himself. He's compelling him to face up to what he really is. That he is a helpless, unclean leper with nothing to recommend him to God. And therefore one who is dependent entirely upon a God who shows mercy, a God of grace. The God who is who he is. You can't be bought or bribed or conquered. But he is the God who loves and saves helpless sinners. Because that's the God he is. And Naaman has to have direct dealings with the God of Elisha. Which is why when you come to verse 15, it's a very different Naaman, isn't it? And he returned to the man of God, and he and all his aides, and came and stood before him and said, "Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel." So the God of Israel is not just one God among many gods. It's not just the greatest God amongst the many gods. He's the only God. There is no God in all the earth. This pagan, this worshipper of many gods has come to see there is no God except the God who is found in Israel. You see, he's come to know the true and the living God. He's not just been washed on the outside, he's been washed on the inside. He's been converted. And this idol-worshipping pagan, he turns his back on it all, this rubbish, and comes to serve the true and the living God. And with his new confession, if you look, there comes a new humility, doesn't there? This is a new Naaman. Before, he was standing there. Come on, Elisha, where are you? But look at the way he says, verse 15. He says, now therefore, please take a gift from your servant. He's now calling himself Elisha's servant. He's a completely different man. He's been changed. There's a humility. Take the gift, please. Look at Elisha's response. But he said, as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Why? Think of all that money. Because God's grace can't be bribed or bought. When God saves you, Naaman, it's free. If there's any cost, God meets the whole cost in full. He meets the whole cost of our salvation himself. So Naaman, take it as a gift. Because that's the God that he is. The God of wonderful, overflowing, free love, grace, kindness for a helpless, guilty leper. Naaman, there must be no misunderstanding. You've not paid for this. It's a gift. It's a gift. It's God's doing from beginning to end. Well, says Naaman, verse 17, if you won't take silver and gold, can I take 2 mule loads of earth? It's quite a contrast there, isn't it? For your servant will no longer offer burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. This man's not just clean on the outside, he's clean on the inside. The Lord has his heart, and he wants to worship the Lord. Well, he can't go to Israel to worship the Lord, so can I have 2 mule loads of Israel to take back with me so I can worship him? Everything's changed, isn't it? This great man, full of himself, has been humbled. This great man who wants God to come running and is dismissive of what he hears and won't listen to what the word of God says is now humble and loves God. He's a saved man. Turn his back on those gods to worship the true God. This is not outward religion, is it? This is a heart relationship. I want to worship God. Can I have a bit of Israel with me so that every day I can worship him? The Lord is everything to him. Which is why his conscience is tender, verse 18. Yet in this thing may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the temple of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow down in the temple of Rimmon. See, Rimmon is the god in Syria. When I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord please pardon your servant in this thing. Yes, he won't worship the storm god. That's who he was, the storm god Rimmon. Only when my master bows down, and I have to be at his side, I have to, as it were, show my support, not for Rimmon, but for my king. Elisha, is that okay? Can I do that? What answer would you give? Well, Elisha knows that Naaman's question shows how soft and tender Naaman's heart is. And actually, Naaman's loyalty is now to the Lord. So he gives a wise pastoral answer, doesn't he? He says, go in peace. The healing of Naaman. We close with a lesson. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master. Because of him, the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. The Bible uses images to convey a message. Thursday was the general election. If we could flash up images on the screen, how would you react? What if there was an image of David Cameron? Ed Miliband's... So Edstone, is it? Tombstone? What if you saw Alex Salmond up there? What would you think? George Galloway? Vincent Cable? Maybe some of those pictures, you look at it and shrug your shoulders and think, so what other pictures you'd see, if you got just the right angle, you'd feel something, wouldn't you? There'd be a reaction. Maybe some of those images, your reaction would be quite visceral, I think. So what does the Bible do? It flashes up an image for us. The image of leprosy. And it says, look, look, look. And the image is to provoke a response. Because sometimes we need a kick in the stomach. Think of what Naaman once was. Clean, beautiful, unblemished, but not anymore. He is a leper. And says the Bible, think what humankind once was. Beautiful, clean, unblemished. The finite reflection of the infinite God. But not anymore. When we walked out on God, when sin invaded the world, we became unclean, disqualified, defiled. When that image is flashed up, it's an image, says the Bible, of you. We are the lepers. Unfit for the presence of God, fit only for God's rubbish heap. Look at the way Paul puts it. He says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God. They have all turned aside. They have together become unprofitable or corrupt or perished. Might even say leprous. There is none who does good, no, not one. In spiritual terms, whatever my triumphs, whatever my successes, whatever I can point to, the defining quality of you and me and everyone is leprosy. I'm an unclean sinner. And Naaman pictures that. He was a mighty man of valor, but a leper. But of course, this is an account of a leper that's made clean. Islam and Christianity share in common the idea of moral absolutes. So what's the difference between Allah and the Lord? Well, one Indian philosopher put it like this. He said, Allah is too majestic to come into a dirty manger or a filthy heart. In other words, he leaves you a leper. But the God of the Bible comes into the muck of this world. He touches the leper. He comes into filthy hearts and makes them clean. And he does it in the person of his Son. Jesus Christ came into this world to save sinners, to make us clean, to bring us back to God. And he did it by his cross. He never sinned. He's clean. I have sinned. I've broken God's commands. I've never loved God with all my heart. I've never loved my neighbor as myself. I'm unclean. But on the cross, there's a great transaction. My uncleanness is put to his account, and his cleanness is put to my account. And he's punished as the leper, and I'm accepted as the holy. And he's marked and scarred with the grotesque defilement of my sin. He is leprous. And my flesh is restored like the flesh of a little child, born again. And it's through faith in Jesus Christ that I'm washed. Washed clean, forgiven, accepted. In Peter's words, our hearts are purified by faith. This is the God who comes into filthy hearts, leprous hearts, and makes them clean. And my friend, that makes sense, doesn't it? Are you happy in your skin? We all have that sense, don't we? If you could see the real me. If I stripped everything off in that sense, you'd be disappointed. Actually, more than that, you'd reject me. Because underneath it, I am leprous. I am unclean. We all wrestle with feelings of guilt and shame. We all of us have that sense of waiting to be found out. And if we don't want people to see the real me, how much more God? I am a leper. That's why this is here. That's what you are, says the Bible. I'm a leper. But here is a leper cleansed. And it's a pointer, it's a foretaste of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So why do you come to Jesus Christ? To be made whole. To be made clean. Is it because, like Naaman, it's just too humbling? We've seen it, haven't we? Verses 10 to 12. Here's the messenger. Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh will be restored to you and you shall be clean. Naaman's furious. He expects some theatricalities. He expects Elisha to come to him to say all the right words. And then he says, are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers in Damascus, better than the waters in Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. His pride has been stung. Is that your problem? You won't come to Christ because it's just too humbling. Because God, well, God speaks to you as a sinner. And doesn't give you any rights or bargaining power. There is nothing to recommend you. He says you've just got to face up to your filthiness. And fall on the kind arms of Jesus. And you won't. You won't. His servants came near and spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet told you to do something great, would you not have done it? Oh, that's different, isn't it? Then you could make a contribution. You could do something. I would keep my pride intact, keep my self-respect. But God says, no, you can't. It's this way or no way. But David got it. This is what he says. He says, for you do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it. You do not delight in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. This is the man who's committed murder. This is the man who's committed adultery. This is the man who's filthy. What can he do? All he can do is come to God and humble himself before the God who forgives. He says, Lord, save me, change me, forgive me. All I can offer you is a broken heart. All I can do is fall before you, is humble myself. And David finds that the broken heart is the healed heart. Tonight we sang 2 hymns of Charles Wesley. The Wesleys got England in the 18th century singing. John would preach this good news of Jesus Christ. And if you read the accounts, literally the scum of the earth would turn up. And they would gather in their thousands to hear him preach. And often when he preached, they were hostile. They'd throw dead cats at him. They would blow trumpets. They would throw stones. Sometimes he'd be hit and beaten. And he always made it a point never to strike back. You just carry on speaking this wonderful, gracious gospel. And as the crowds listened, what would happen? Gradually, they would begin to remove their hats. And then some would fall to their knees. Because as he preached this wonderful message of Jesus Christ, they realized that God himself was present. And it was God himself who was opening his arms and offering life and salvation for lepers. And all they could do was fall on their knees and humble themselves. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And the unclean were made clean. And for the joy of it all, they couldn't stop singing. And God is here tonight in the gospel. God is speaking to you tonight in the gospel. And you're hardening your heart. You're cold in your heart. You're proud in your heart. So you've got something to stand on. Something to bargain with. And God says, down, down, bow the knee, humble yourself, and you'll be clean. Maybe you haven't come to Jesus because it's just too simple. I mean, look at it, wash and be clean. And maybe you're a cynic. There have been too many broken promises, too many letdowns. And you're thinking to yourself, it just can't be that straightforward. Come to Jesus Christ and you'll be forgiven. You'll be made clean. Anyone can do that. Exactly. But what does he do? He went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God. He takes God at his word. In the end, he doesn't argue about it. He just says, well, I'll do it. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. You see, down is up. And tonight it is simple. It's simply taking God at his word. And all that you need, you will find in Christ. You may say, well, I don't understand this, and I'm not clear about that. And what does this mean? Well, all that you need, you will find in Christ. Don't complicate it. Don't add extra layers. Just come to Jesus Christ. Let Christ straighten you up and sort you out. And all that you need, you will find in him. You come to him just as you are. Maybe you haven't come to Jesus Christ because, well, frankly, it's just too ridiculous. How can the Jordan make a leper clean? How can the Son of God, nailed to a cross 2,000 years ago, save me from my sins and make me whole and clean? It's ridiculous. Is it? Maybe you've grown up in this church and you know this gospel, and that's actually where you're at. You're saying, I've heard this. This is ridiculous. How can this be so? The Greeks loved logic. For the Greeks, these are the ancient Greeks, logic was king. So when Aristotle said that if you drop 2 stones from a cliff and one is twice as heavy as the other, the one that's twice as heavy will travel twice as fast. That's what he said. And all the Greeks nodded and said, yep, that's logical. In fact, it was so logical that for 1800 years, no one thought of testing it. And then Galileo came along, did it, 2 stones, one's twice as heavy as the other, dropped them, and they hit the ground at the same time. That's ridiculous. But it's true. That's how it works. It's the logic that was wrong. So before you think the gospel is ridiculous, maybe you better put it to the test. Are you happy in your skin? You're a leper, aren't you? So come to God for God's remedy. Put him to the test. Don't say, oh, put him to the test. God himself invites you to put me to the test. It says, taste and see that the Lord is good. Don't stand on the sidelines trying to weigh it out whether it's logical or not. Come and see, says God. Taste and see. Then you've got something to say. My friend, you're a leper. Take God at his word. Humble yourself. And come to Jesus Christ. Just as you are.